All right, this is lesson number 6 in the Baptist Basics University course, Baptist History. This lesson, we're going to cover the Dark Ages. We're going to cover about the 6th century to the 14th centuries. Quite a bit of time there we're going to cover, about 8 centuries worth of time. Honestly, it's easy to cover that much time because not a lot happened. So actually was very busy in the work of the true Christians at the time, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. It's a very dark period in the history of humanity and of civilization. Politically, monarchs were ruling, absolute power was coming into play. Even really a decentralized government had developed when Rome has fallen apart. So feudalism was taking place. Individual little kings would rule over their area and rule with an iron hand. Morally, it was very dark. Some of the stuff that go on just mind-boggling when you read about the morals at the time. Economically, people were very poor. Religiously, people many people were stuck in the clutches of Roman Catholicism. And educationally, I mean, the literacy rate was just mind-blowingly low. Hardly anybody could read. Hardly anybody even cared to. Honestly, for most people, it was just pure survival during these times. That's the only thing their life was survival. It is during this time that the Roman Catholic Church will grow to its greatest power. And really, it'll be on the decline at the close of this time. And just really lose most of its prestige and power and influence to some other groups. Now, in spite of all the problems we had during this time, there's still faithful remnant of believers out there who were spreading the truth, who were preaching the gospel. As I say, in the time of spiritual darkness, there's always a light to show the way. And in this time of darkness, there was many bright, shining lights pointing people to the truth. Sadly, most often, those people who stood for Christ paid the price with them being a martyr. They gave their lives for Christ. Now we're going to talk about a few of these groups there were that held to Baptist distinctives. In fact, most of this lesson, I know previous lesson, we talked a lot more general church history, but I'm going to tell you about some of these groups who existed during this time who stood for truth and stood for right. The most influential and longest lasting of these groups during this time was the Paulicians. They were named for either a couple of reasons, a little bit of controversy on that. Either they had an early leader named Paul, which could have been the case, I highly doubt it, or they emphasized the teachings of the Apostle Paul. That's the one I believe was probably the case. And honestly, people by this name lasted as a very recognizable group for over 1,000 years. In fact, there, if you get a copy of the Key of Truth and read the little prologue on it, that book was actually found by some little dissident itinerant preacher who was converting some Greek Orthodox people to his particular brand of Christianity in the mid 1800s, and he claimed to be a Paulician. And now some of the doctrines he held and are promoted in his copy of that book are a little suspicious. But that book, and we'll talk about that. I guess we'll go ahead and talk about that. The book, The Key of Truth, very interesting book. It's been preserved. It's been passed down to us. Now the manuscripts on it are not quite complete, not in the best shape that were passed down. Sections of it were missing. The theory was that when this man got caught by the authorities, that he ripped out some of the pages that he knew would be most incriminating, that were the writer of that book had really bashed the Catholics. And I've read it, and boy, you can tell, right about the time he really gets going with Catholics and something, there's all of a sudden a break of a few pages. And that's shown in when they translate it, they show, you know, there's a few pages missing here, or a few sentences missing here. So you can actually buy a copy of that book. There is a group that has reprinted that. If you get on Amazon.com, you can find that. That's where I purchased it. Set you back $20-something. Not a must-have, but very interesting if you want a little insight. And as I say, that particular book, you can tell, and even in the text, it points out places where, you know, something was crossed out or erased. So evidently, it had been adjusted or modified through the centuries, and even that copy, which wasn't that old of a copy, but it had seen some editing. But it's very interesting that probably at least some of the core teachings of that go all the way back to the early days. In fact, I think it said to like the 8th or 9th century is what, what's the guy's name? Farrar. I've gone blank on the guy's name that translated it. He thinks it goes back to about the 9th century. So, but anyway, that's a very interesting book. Now, it does contain some Baptist distinctives. It does talk about believers' baptism at length. It does have some really screwball kind of stuff in it, though. In fact, it questions the deity of Christ. It holds adoptionist views, or what they called, that said that Jesus became the Messiah, became a God, and that he was merely just a man before. It has some problems, I'll be honest with you. It's not the shining beacon of Baptist distinctives that some people make it out to be, but it does contain at least 3 or 4 of the Baptist distinctives very, very clear. Where it touches on Baptist distinctives, it is pretty much Baptist. But it does have some very strange problems. In fact, I'll tell you one of the very interesting things is it uses the word elect to talk about the church leadership. It doesn't, you know, in the Bible, the elect usually talks about saved people and stuff. But in this, it takes a second to catch on to it. But the word elect, and it is used to talk about the church leadership. So, very interesting. So, if you ever get a chance, it's a kind of a dull and dry read. But and honestly, the book is probably 300 something pages long. The book itself, The Key of Truth, is only about 40 pages of it. There's a history of it and an analysis of it. And but anyway, the Paulicians, though, they were basically based in Armenia at the time. They were very influential. They were sending out missionaries. They even were granting some religious freedom. Some people say that they established a free republic that granted religious freedom not only to Christians but also to Muslims. I've never found any historical basis for that other than a couple of Baptist history books. I have no idea where they get that information. I would love to know. They call the place Tapris. Well, if you look it up, Tapris is a town, and I think evidently maybe they had locally in that region under the influence of that town may have had some religious freedom, but I don't think it was as widespread as people say. As I say, I'm not just parroting what I've heard. I'm telling you what I know through my study. And that is something I've wanted to know, and I've done a little bit of study on. There's not a lot of information on it, but it appears that a few Baptist history books, including Phil Stringer's, they don't do that justice, and I want to know where they got their information from. Because if I'm wrong, I can't find any confirmation of what they say. Now, the Bogomils, they were a group that branched off the Paulicians. They were a very regional group focused in Bulgaria. In fact, there are still some people called Bogomils in Bulgaria. But evidently they had congregations as far away as Moscow, Russia. It is estimated that they, at their height, had over 2.5 million followers. So a very, very large group, especially when you think of the time. Most famous leader was a guy named Basil. He was burned at the stake by the Emperor Alexander Comnenus I. You can read a little bit about him, kind of interesting. And by the way, I'll tell you something kind of interesting. If you look this up on Wikipedia, the word Bogomil, well, it was their name. I can't remember exactly what that means now. In fact, I think it's debatable what that originally meant. But that word, through people talking bad about them, became a word that meant contempt. You know, you didn't want to be called Bogomil because it meant you were just an ignorant, no good son of a gun kind of thing. Well, that word actually has degenerated and followed down into even modern languages in Europe, and words similar to that mean, basically mean you're not a very good person, usually a sexually immoral person. But they say that actually is derivative from the people talking bad about the Bogomils. So, just an interesting little side note there. I never heard that before. I saw that on Wikipedia. You can look it up. So, excuse me. During the most of those groups really were more influential in the early part of the Dark Ages, but a little bit later, there were some more groups that came up. The Albigensians sometimes are called, from the town of Albi in France. I think that's how you say that. I don't speak French, don't want to, so that's probably close enough. But there were many independent congregations there, took a stand against the Catholic Church. Now, unfortunately, they did not have a very long lifespan because the Roman Catholic Church severely persecuted them. In fact, some church historians say that's probably one of the worst times of persecution ever. And they were pretty much wiped out. And basically the philosophy was, you know, let's kill them all, let God sort them out. They would go in and wipe out a whole town, and, you know, just because there was a few Albigenses there. They just killed them all, and hey, if they were good Catholics, they believe they were going to heaven. If they were the Albigenses, they believe they weren't. They just, you know, they say it's a kill them all, let God sort them out mentality. So, just shows how ruthless the Roman Catholic Church would become. Another group that would come about was the Petrobrusians. Kind of an odd name to say. They took the name of their leader, Petro of Bruys, B-R-U-Y-S. They started about the year 1100. Now, one of his followers was a man named Henry of Lausanne. He was very influential, and his followers founded another movement called the Henricians. And those two groups, they had some pretty significant followings, and we know some of what they taught, and we know the Catholics hated them, so that means they can't be all that bad, right? but anyway, the years later, the Swiss Anabaptists, we'll get a little bit, I'll talk a little bit about them later, they actually would claim that their origins were in those groups, the Petrobusians and the Henricians. So, very significant group to talk about. Another group was the Arnoldists. Their leader was a man named Arnold Brescia. He went to Rome. Very interesting story about him. He actually went to Rome. He and his followers ran the Pope out of town, and didn't last very long. The Catholics came back in force and captured him, and they hung him and burned his body. They did not appreciate what he had done. But he actually did promote at least some of the Baptist distinctives. He was not a pacifist by any means, but very, very, very interesting story with him. Couple other smaller groups, the Picards. There was a guy named Berengarius, I guess how you say that name, had some followers, and those people evidently, from what we know, mainly through the writings of Catholic leaders, that they were probably Baptist too. So now, the strongest of all these groups was a group called the Waldenses, sometimes called the Waldensians. They were named after, well, there's a couple of different origins of the name. Sometimes called Valdois, V-A-L-D-O-I-S. And some people say that their name comes from that word, which was, I believe, French for valleys, and because they would in time of persecution, they run up into the hills and they kind of live up in the hills away from everybody. But I think their name probably comes from their early leader, Peter Waldo. Peter Waldo was a very wealthy merchantman from Lyons, France. He was converted to true Christianity through his reading of the New Testament. In fact, he went on to him and his followers translated the Bible and actually spread copies of it in local languages thereabout. He helped finance. He basically disavowed his fortune, but he would invest it in the work of God and then finance some preachers and stuff. And his followers, his preachers, were sometimes called poor men of Lyons because they basically took a kind of, I don't know, they disavowed fortunes and stuff and disapproved of it, and they just went out and trusted God for their provisions and went and preached the gospel. So, a very interesting group. They attempted at very great length to live peaceably with local governments, including the Catholics. And they tried to defend their beliefs and tried to get along. And as the case is, when you try to stand for right, evil doesn't want to get along with you. So they were severely persecuted, almost wiped out. In spite of this, they still prospered. They still sent out missionaries. Their teaching still spread. Years and years later, people would still be accused of holding doctrines of the Waldenses. In fact, I didn't know this until I was studying this out a little bit. There are actually still people who claim the name of Waldensians. In fact, I found there actually are some Waldensian churches in America. There's not very many, and they're fairly small, but there actually is Waldensian churches in America. Very interesting. I don't know what they believe, but that name has still been preserved through all the centuries. I'll tell you a little side note. I'll tell you what, before I get into that, Waldensians, supposedly, legend has it that the Catholics sent in some monks to spy them out, some bishops or something to spy them out, find out a little more about them, and said that they came back and reported that even their little children knew more Bible than the bishops did. So, the Waldenses put a lot of stock on the authority of the scripture, and from what we know, they were a very solid, very Baptist group. Now, let's get down this little side story here. During this time, in fact, a very early part of this Dark Ages, there is a very famous man you may have heard of. His name was Patrick. Now, that is the famous St. Patrick that has the holiday that if you don't wear green, you get pinched. St. Patrick, excuse me, I don't really want to call him St. Patrick, was a missionary to Ireland. And now there is some mystery as to what he actually believed, and there are actually two letters written by him, supposedly, and every indication is that they are legitimate. You can find them on the internet and read them. One of them I couldn't find an English translation of, but I could the more famous of the two, and it actually talks about some of his life and his ministry. Very interesting. But it is clear in those letters that he was probably not a Catholic. Some of the terminology you have to kind of understand. Just because he says something, says a word, it doesn't mean what we think it means nowadays. And he talked about how his granddad was a bishop. Well, as I say in the Bible, pastors are called bishops. You look at the doctrines he held and promoted in his ministry, I highly, highly doubt that the man was a Catholic. I don't think he was Baptist necessarily, but I think he was a lot closer to being one than he was to being a Catholic. I just throw that in for a little side story. But evidently many years later, the Catholics hijacked his name, supposedly. The legend is, the way I've been told, is that the Catholics were trying to get the Irish to help them in a war. And they had heard about this Patrick guy and that the Irish had actually very high respect for him. And so in their negotiations, as they were trying to get the Irish, knew these guys were a bunch of crooks, didn't want to deal with them. But one of the Catholics guys said, oh, hey, you know that, that fella Patrick, I forgot to tell you, we actually sent him over here. And they said, wow, you sent Patrick? Well, you must be good people because Patrick was so great. Well, supposedly that's kind of what happened, is they kind of conveniently claimed him a couple hundred years later or so. And anyway, very, very interesting. In fact, I would recommend reading that letter by Patrick and talking about his ministry. It's very interesting, talking about the people being saved and stuff. It's very neat. And also, he also admits that there were also other missionaries there at the time. So, very interesting. However, the biggest story of the time probably was not the light that was shining, but the darkness that was setting in on the land. There's a lot of false doctrines that were being accepted into quote-unquote mainstream Christianity. Some doctrines that were brought in and endorsed and heavily promoted by the Catholic Church and other false groups include infant baptism, even infant communion. They would actually give, in the case of Catholics, wine, but they would actually give wine and a wafer to even babies. Indulgences, that was basically for a price, your sins will be forgiven for you, in very simplified terms. Purgatory, an intermediary place where you would go until you had paid for your sins, then you could go to heaven or, you know, the priest prayed you out. Transubstantiation, that is when you take part in the Lord's Supper, that the wine and the wafer that they use, I don't use, but they use, that those would actually turn into the actual literal body and blood of Christ when you ate them. So basically you're a cannibal. No basis at all for that in the Bible. The celibacy of the priesthood, saying the priesthood couldn't marry it during this time. And by the way, that you can use that as a proof, because you know Peter was married, so it is a little bit hard for him to be the first pope if the pope couldn't be married. Because we know he had a mother-in-law, and it's hard to have a mother-in-law if you're not married. The Inquisition was started about this time, where they would go in and torture people into recanting their faith, and or if they didn't recant their faith, they'd kill them. Auricular confession. That's where you would go and confess your sins to the priest. All this stuff was gaining a lot of ground during this time. Some of this was new, some of it really wasn't, some of it just was, had just finally kind of been accepted in the Catholic Church. One of the main causes for attacks on the true Christians and some of these other good groups and leaders was the fact that they didn't accept these new doctrines. In fact, estimates run as high as 50 million people were martyred during this period of the Dark Ages. But as I said before, I kind of leave on a sour note there, but as I said before, even in the Dark Ages, there were groups shining forth and spreading the light of the gospel. Well, we think we had it bad today. Think how bad those poor guys had it. Just having the Bible could have been a death sentence. Just disagreeing with the Catholic Church could have been a death sentence. Probably was. Yet they flourished, and yet their message spread. Amazing, amazing time. As I say, in times of darkness, there is still people who defend the faith. There's still a remnant that holds forth the two true doctrines of the Bible. Sometimes they're a little hard to find, but they're there. They're there. That's historical fact. Every time you see the great attacks on biblical Christianity, historic Christianity, time there's a period of great attack on it, there are people who step up and really just go straight at the challenge to defend and define the faith. And we could go over that on and on. And there were great many men and groups, women, children, during the time of the Dark Ages who did the same. The Waldenses, just amazing, some of the stuff they accomplished. Same thing with the Paulicians and the Bogomils and some of these groups. I mean, these may have been a little bit regional in their major impact, but their message spread. It got about. I'm telling you, people knew that the Catholic Church didn't really add up, and they were looking for something. And great many turned to the truth during that time. Unfortunately, they didn't have a lot of the political power, and since the Catholic Church had most of the political power, they kind of got the final say in what went on and how long you got to live if you accepted some of these positions. So, but anyway, that's a good overview. Boy, it's a lot of time to cover. It almost doesn't do justice to it to cover almost 800 years of history. But I hope you've learned something. I hope that reinforced. Hope you've been challenged by the example of some of those guys. Anyway, the next lesson, we're going to not deal with quite as much, but a very influential time. And we're going to deal with the Reformation. We're going to deal with just a few centuries, the 15th to the 17th century. And we'll prove to you that, hey, Luther wasn't the guy that came up with all that stuff. I look forward to getting to that with you. And I appreciate you listening to Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage, and I'll see you next time.